Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following episode was recorded in front of a live streaming audience on Saturday, November the 16th, 2024.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name. Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or else media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 76, The Enemy Invasion. Hello and welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Steven, and a thousand miles over there to my right is another host, Mr. Ed Moore.
Sup?
So, Ed, I wanted to thank you. I noticed that you had updated the show notes for this and the next episode. That was actually a really big help, but it freaked me the hell out at the same time, and I'll tell you why. So, I get up this morning and sit down, and I read the story that we're going to talk about today for this episode and the story we're going to talk about for the next episode. I read those this morning. And then I sat down to get the show notes together, and I access the show notes, which is a Google Doc that both Ed and I have access to. And I see that the first thing I notice is that little bit that I do that say the following episode was recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice it says today's date. And I was like, that's weird. And at first I thought, holy crap, because normally I just type over what's there from the last time we record.
Right.
So seeing that there, I'm assuming that's what was there the last time we recorded.
Yeah. That's.
And I said, oh, did I give out the wrong date last time? And I was getting ready to pull up the last recording just to see what I had said.
Yeah, to listen to it. Okay.
But then I noticed, well, hold on. This has the notes for the issue we're talking about today. And I start scratching my head, and I look down to the next episode, and that's updated as well. And I'm like, when did I do this? I was really worried that I had gone into some kind of fugue state and was updating notes and had no clue.
I don't remember any of it. Yeah.
Well, but then I saw a little thing in there that showed that you're the one that had done it. And I was like, oh, that was so nice of him. Yeah, it freaked me out at the same time.
Well, see, what happened is I was up my time 6 o'clock this morning.
Yeah.
And messing around. And I thought, well, I'll try to do something constructive. And so I just went in there and tried to update and change things and be ready. So,
yeah. No, it was a big help. It was one less thing I had to do this morning because I always put everything off to the last minute. That's just the way I am. Yeah.
As long as you manage to get it done, it's not necessarily bad, but, you know, it makes it rough if you're not able to get it done.
Well, it left me with a little time to just kind of chill this morning, basically, after I got over my freak out and realized what was going on. But I thought, you know, you hit a certain age and you start to worry about things that, you know, could I have done this and then just don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. Forgot about it. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. And see, that's the scary thing.
Yeah.
20 years ago, it's like, no, that's impossible. My mind is too good.
Yeah.
But now you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I start thinking, well, when would I have done that? Would I have just immediately finished recording last time and just thought, I'm going to go ahead and update these notes for next time? That was almost the hardest part for me, was trying to imagine, Why would I do that? I don't do stuff like that. I don't prepare early. I just don't.
See, and again, the problem is that you very well could have last time after we recorded, because that was 2 whole weeks ago.
Right.
Good luck freaking remembering what you did 2 weeks ago.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when I go to edit these episodes and get them, like, the episode that's coming out for those watching the live feed, the episode that's coming out on Monday, which is episode 69. You know, I go in to put in the name of the story into the show notes of the episode. I don't remember. I mean, it's been 3 or 4 weeks since we talked about it.
Yeah,
and so I have to, I start thinking, man, I should, why do I keep over, you know, why do I keep deleting the previous show notes and putting new show notes in for when we record? Because the information's right there. So I got to pull the book back out and find the title and go back to Mike's Amazing World of Comics and get those that information. And such a struggle for us to do podcasting these days.
I feel the pain. It is, Us old gray beards, we have our own unique set of problems. Yes.
Yep. And I don't know if I talked about it 5 weeks ago when we recorded. I don't know if I talked about it in an episode, but one of our cats had gotten out the morning that we were getting ready to record.
Yeah, you mentioned it. I don't remember which episode it was, but yeah, I remember you mentioning it.
It's been, I think my daughter said he had been gone for 5 weeks, but he came back Friday night, Thursday night, because I had gone out. You know, we have all these stray cats outside. So I had gone out at about 6:30 to go get Rana from work. And this cat comes up and starts circling my legs and it's just meowing and meowing. And Manny, he looks like one of the other stray cats out there. So I just thought, what? You've got food. Knock it off. Leave me alone. And then I looked down. I was like, holy crap, that's Manny. And we had a nice celebration in the house. I'm sure he'll visit at some point while we're recording, because when he's not sleeping, he has not left my side. He has been with me all time. You know, when I'm working, he's just laying on my stomach while I'm working. You know, I'll lean back and he's just like right here and I'm working away. So I'm sure he's over there on the couch sleeping right now, but I guarantee you he will show up at some point.
Well, cool.
What's up with you? What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Not much of anything. Just a lot of uproar at work. So I am much gladder after every 8 hours to be able to come home and leave it, because it is rather draining, I guess, emotionally would be what it is. There's a lot of, we have a new overall leader, if you will, and they inherited a buttload of problems that everybody felt should have been corrected as soon as they started. And now that those problems have not been corrected for, Julie has been in place for 3 months. Yeah, right at about 3 months. But the issues have been going on for 6-8 months before her. So everyone is finally reaching an endpoint of tolerance, unfortunately, after she has taken over. So We're losing, we barely have enough people to maintain what we need to do, even so much so that two people that were on the phones and have been, let me take a step back. On the phones, I work at our 911 here in Mercer County.
Okay.
So on the phones are telecommunicators that take calls and dispatch units to emergencies. Our personnel levels are down such that two people that have been, for Thanksgiving, three people that have been promoted off the phones into office jobs are filling shifts so that we have enough people over the Thanksgiving holidays. That's how tight personnel has gotten, because of overrunning problems, people getting fed up and leaving and whatnot. And going to work and hearing people, whether right or wrong, that's a whole nother discussion, but hearing people complain about issues that they don't directly affect me, but they indirectly do, because they affect the people that I work with and they affect their morale, and their morale affects my morale. And so it's just this, I'm not necessarily involved. It's more a peripheral thing, but even on the periphery, it's just very draining to be in that kind of work environment. So here lately, I have been that much more, not that I didn't enjoy coming home, but now I enjoy coming home to get away from that. And that's not a kind work relationship that you want. You know, you don't have to like what you do to an extent, but you certainly have to like it to stay there. You know, I've been there 23 years, so obviously it's not gotten too bad for me.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, I don't know. It's unfortunate. And there are changes on the horizon, but I don't know that the changes will come soon enough for some people. So we'll probably end up losing more people. And
Yeah. Change in you know, a lot of work environments, change tends to happen really slowly. And, you know, I have to imagine just the job itself is stressful enough.
It can be, of course. Yeah. Most of the issue is being tactful. Let's see. Discipline is the main issue that people had. It was lacking with previous leadership.
Yeah.
To the extent that there was virtually none by the time that that last person left. And so now the new incoming person has to deal with that and get discipline back in order, which of course is going to make people angry as well. It's just this personnel issues. They're probably the toughest thing to deal with in leadership of any of the issues leaders will follow, personnel issues. And that's what we have. And we're just trying to work through them and get the ship tightened up to where it needs to be, and then we'll be able to move forward just fine. But the growing pains until then can be pretty substantial.
Yeah, I manage the department that I'm in, and I couldn't imagine coming into a situation like that as a leader, you know, with especially if there were disciplinary issues that weren't being handled, and then that's something that you inherit.
Right.
And because you do have to kind of have to handle that a bit delicately, because you can't just start cracking down, you know,
exactly.
That's going to cause all kinds of problems. So you almost want to just say, all right, we're just starting fresh, you know,
which
whatever you did before.
Right.
But if you start fucking around now, that's we're going to, you know,
it's not a bad time, because we've got the beginning of a calendar year coming. So that is a very good time to say, OK,
yep,
I'll give you guys all of these things notice beforehand. And all of these things will go into place starting January 1. So, you know now if you're doing it right or wrong. And then come January 1, you know what'll happen if somebody has to point out to you that you're doing it wrong. And so that's what we're hoping for. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Work. My daughter, who's now working 40 hours a week, it's funny to hear her in the mornings going, ugh. I don't want to go to work, you know, and it's like, welcome to the world, you know.
And was she also one of these young people that couldn't wait to get out of school until that was the situation?
You know, I don't think she was.
Okay.
You know, I think she, she was and she wasn't, you know, I think anybody is ready to get out of school and start what they think is taking control of their life, you know?
Yeah.
They don't understand until they get into it that, you have a little bit more control than you did when you were in school. But it's
right.
It's almost like you're leaving school and then going to another school. You're just getting paid for it, because the dynamics are usually the pettiness and the bullshit is usually the same.
Yeah. You, as you get older, you find that you have more ability to say no. But that basically is the only more control that you have. You have very little more positive control. You just have the ability to say, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that's something I've enjoyed about getting older. I've, you know, reaching an age where it used to be if a friend would call up and say, hey, let's go out to a club. Let's go watch a band or let's go do something. I'd be like, I don't really want to, but all right, I'll go. But now I'm just like, nah. Stop asking me. I'm never going to go out to the club.
That's all. That's the end. It's like, no, I don't want to do that.
I think I'd rather stay home and do nothing.
There you go.
All right. You ready to start talking about this issue?
Let's do it.
Okay. So today we're looking at The Enemy Invasion, which is the Superman story that appears in Action Comics number 36. It was written by Jerry Siegel with art by Wayne Boring and Joe Shuster, and inks by Wayne Boring. Action Comics number 36 has a cover date of May 1942, but according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, it has an on sale date of March 21st, 1941. Now, I think that should be a cover date of May 1942.
Yeah. Oh, I made a mistake.
No, I think we're still in 41. So the
Yeah.
The cover date. Yeah. We know what we're talking about. 1941. So here's what happened in the issue. Lois attends a meeting of the Volunteers for Peace, a group trying to stop rearmament. Lois speaks out against the group's leader, Stuart Pemberton, inciting the crowd to attack her. Superman arrives to rescue her and return her to the Daily Planet. Superman returns and overhears the plans to sabotage important strategic centers so that Nation X can attack. Superman races around Metropolis, stopping the saboteurs working with a foreign power. An attack force of planes arrives and begins bombing the city. Superman smashes the planes and forces the leader to order a retreat. Pemberton warns citizens to surrender during a radio broadcast. Lois tries to stop him, but she is captured. Superman rescues her again and takes out the traitor Pemberton. Ed, what'd you think about this one?
This pretty much showed you what World War II would have been like had Superman truly been involved. that was absolutely the thing that occurred to me. It's like, well, yeah, that's why DC had to do something to take him out of the equation, because if not, good luck doing anything with Superman controlling the skies of Allied territory. I mean, you know, the Allied lines could have just pushed on through and done whatever they wanted to with Superman in the sky covering them. You know, what's the problem? Yep. But yeah, you definitely, if you had any questions why before, I mean, he's still Superman, but here we finally get to see him go up against a scenario that very well could have occurred in World War II in Europe or over the Pacific, you know, whichever. And you see that, if Superman had been involved, it would have been no bueno. Yeah. So I did enjoy it. I liked that it was it seemed to me that it had a little bit different flavor than what some of the not the more recent, but some of the earlier books have had. They definitely have shifted in tone about 2/3 of the way of the stories we've covered. This last third seems to have kept this different, maybe more adult kind of tone, but not chicka chicka bow wow kind of adult kind of that kind of adult, but just maybe sophistication maybe would be a better word, something like that. Although I did think that, gosh, there were a lot of people that bit it in this story.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they really don't show at the aftermath or the destruction of the bombing. And if it wouldn't have been for the narration, or I guess there's a radio guy at one point that talks about the bombing, I just kind of almost assumed at first that Superman happened to get there in time to stop the bombs. But no, there's some major destruction, according to the radio guy. We just don't ever see it. So I have to assume just from the bombing, all kinds of people had died from that.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
I don't imagine that there was much in place in Metropolis at the time to warn of something like that, so the people didn't get any warning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, really, for the time, this probably was considered a very political issue.
Mm, sure.
Because the whole subject of rearmament, this is, you know, World War II is going on. It's happening. It's all over there in Europe. And there are, you know, there's the faction of Americans that want to get into the war, and they're the ones, I guess, who support rearmament. And then there's the faction of Americans that don't want to get into the war, and so it's none of our business. Let's stay out of it. It's over there. It's not over here. We don't need to worry about it. And so this guy, Pemberton, is taking that and I guess trying to use it to their advantage as Nation X, which I find it kind of funny that when it comes to the subject of rearmament, I think anybody at the time reading this knows exactly what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So for them not to just straight up use Germany or the Nazis, but to, because we've talked about this before. Whenever they have one of these fake nations that they never name trying to come in and take over, we know at this point that they're talking about the Germans. We know they're talking about the Nazis, but it's like DC was willing to mention rearmament. They were willing to go to that level, but they did. They didn't want to go the step above at this point.
Right, that's
and
all.
I'll be interested to see if that if Germany is ever mentioned before America actually goes into the war,
mm-hmm.
and how these comics change at that point. Because I know we always see, like, we have that issue of Captain America number one where Cap's punching Hitler in the mouth. You know,
right.
It's like I don't quite know or recall how they handled any of that with DC Comics, especially Superman. So it'll be interesting to kind of get into that at some point, which is about half a year away, maybe, because this would have been March, I think we said.
Right.
So, yeah, we're getting there.
So we've got about the next 2.5 to 3 years of stories will be smack in the middle of it. So we'll have an opportunity to see how it was handled. Speaking of which, now, the rearmament question was a cover for these people.
Yeah.
So by the end of the story, Lois and Clark and the paper still really can't be seen to have taken a side one way or the other. And by extension, the people at DC, because I believe that the writers at DC are represented by Lois and Clark and the paper,
yes.
what they do and say. That's our point of view. So even though they brought it up and they mentioned it and they set it up to look like, well, Superman was anti-rearmament. In truth, no, because the rearmament was just a cover. It's really not what these people were after. So Superman was able to get in there and beat them up and still not show a side.
This is where I was kind of torn on the whole thing, because really it's Pemberton and his group are, you know, they're supposed to be, this was what, the Volunteers for Peace.
Mm-hmm.
So they're actually speaking out against rearmament.
Right.
And there's a point here on page 2 where Pemberton says, I'll go further than that. I'll wager that the reason Metropolis newspapers are supporting national rearmament is because they're receiving secret payoffs. And that's when Lois gets all pissed off
mm-hmm.
and charges the stage. So they don't actually come out and say that the Daily Planet supports rearmament, but obviously some newspapers in Metropolis do. So we don't know at this point. And it's really kind of a weird thing to think about, because I think, I don't know, there's that part of me that's like, I mean, I would never really be in support of war in general, right? So the idea of just simply throwing money at national defense doesn't always appeal to me. But at the same time, hindsight's 20/20, and, you know, this was one of those wars that we were battling evil, right? The Nazis were evil. They wanted to take over the world. So it's kind of like a war that, whether we wanted to get into it or not, eventually it would have happened, regardless of Pearl Harbor. You know, it would have happened. So it's like, looking at it from that lens, it's like, yes, we have to support rearmament. You know, we got to fight the Nazis. But nobody really knew that back then, as far as I know. Maybe some of these people who were calling for rearmament, maybe they knew, maybe there were rumors, I don't know, of what was going on, what Hitler was all about. I don't know. And maybe that's why I need to look up some documentaries about this time and you know, not there's all kinds of documentaries just about the war, but I'd really love to learn the, you know, just America at this point in time. Why? What were the reasons people wanted to get into it? What were the reasons people didn't want to get into it? And it could, because it's almost like, I don't know, it's almost, I don't know. It's like you look at it nowadays from the hindsight days, it almost looks as if the people who didn't want to get into the war were the bad guys. And the people that did want to get into the war are the good guys. But at the same time, it's like, but getting into war is not a good thing. And
yeah,
that's why I'd be interested to know what America knew. Because if you've ever watched have you seen Band of Brothers on HBO?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There's a moment, there's that episode of Band of Brothers where it says, Why We Go to War, I think is the episode title. And that's when they discover that concentration camp.
Right.
which leads me to believe if they are trying to portray the history accurately, it wasn't until that moment in the war that the American military, thus the American people, didn't truly understand what the Nazis were doing in regard to the, quote, Jewish solution, right?
Right.
So
right.
It makes me wonder what kind of rumors were circulating before the America got, you know, I need to try to seek that out, because I think it would be interesting to know.
At some point, I think it just really boils down to that quote that you hear people talk speak of. And I looked it up. It's attributed to Edmund Burke, who I don't know who that is. But the quote, "The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing."
Yep.
So ultimately, the question comes down to, I think, that, you know, yeah. and particularly what was going on with the Chinese and the Japanese had been going on since before World War One, actually, which was yeah. only about 20 years ago. But the advancement of the of fascist Germany and Hitler, that was a brand new thing that had only yeah. been going on for about 3 or 4 years. And any reports, I would imagine, that were coming from people who had been witnessing that could not have been good as far as what Hitler was doing or how it looked or anything like that. So regardless of anything else, at some point, like you said, the U.S. would have had to have gotten involved. There, we would have had too many friends that were involved, and maybe they would have asked us for help. Maybe not. Yep. I mean, it just yep. depends. But at some point, a president would have had to have told our country that, you know, hey, look, enough of our friends are involved in this. We have to help them, because if they're not there, if nothing is done, this is probably the ultimate outcome. Unless yeah. somebody steps up, you know. So, yeah, and even then, I mean, you would have people that would disagree. But given that context, I just don't understand how consciously you could have disagreed with that motivation. That motivation yeah. by itself. Now, of course, we know that, you know, politics are much, much more complex than anything like that. But if that is the lens through which it is shown to us, how can you not agree that, yes, we need to help?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's, so.
And that's why I need to seek out information about that time frame. Because, you know, think about today. Think about, like, what's going on in Ukraine, right?
Mm-hmm.
It almost echoes it to a certain extent. You've got this guy in who controls this country in a fascist type of way, and he invades this other country that they used to be part of the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. and now they're trying to get it back. And you got a lot of people, you know, you got a faction of the United States that's like, we have to help. We got to help them. They can't let this guy just invade and subjugate all these people. That's what America does. We fight the bad guys. And then you've got the other faction that's like, no, that's not our, it's none of our business. We're not in this. And so it's almost kind of the same thing. And, you know, when it comes to learning truly what's happening over there, we don't get all the right information. Even in this day and age, with the technology and the 24-hour right. news cycle and the way that news can literally travel from one side of the country or one side of the world to the other immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, you know, they had radio and junk, but still, I have to imagine that a lot of what they were hearing, kind of like today, they don't truly knew that. None of them probably truly knew what was going on over there. However, I do know that there would be, you know, people in the United States that still had relatives living right. in Germany, yeah. for example. And so they would get letters and they would know, you know, oh my God, this is what's happened. You know, the family down the street were taken away last night, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
So people, I think, and I think those are the people that were probably, we need to get into this war. You know, this is what's happening over there. And then politically, you don't know. I think, who was the, was it Eisenhower at this point? Not Eisenhower.
No, Roosevelt.
Roosevelt. Yeah. I know that I've listened to some, I listen to a lot of history podcasts, and I've listened to, like, I listened to the one about every presidential election leading up to this one. So I was listening, you know, I listened to episodes about him during this time, and I felt like he wanted to get into the war, maybe, but he knew that it wasn't a popular thing, and so he couldn't really do anything about it. And it's probably why I feel like there was a conspiracy theory that went out around at some point that we were behind what happened in Pearl Harbor just to give Americans reason to get into the war.
Right.
You know, so that's, it's good to know that that kind of crazy shit has never changed in this country. But yeah, it's, I need to seek out more information like that. The problem is that when I listen to podcasts like that, I don't tend to retain the information for very long because I'm, you know, there's so much is so much in, you're getting so much input every single day. I just, I don't have one of those brains that retains a lot of that junk. But there was a couple things I wanted to point out to, in this story.
Okay.
First off, we meet this guy on page one when Lois shows up to the peace rally. There's a guy there. They talk about it in the narration box. As Lois enters Gladstone Hall, Ted Allen confronts her. Have we met Ted Allen before? They make it sound like we should know who this guy is.
Well, Ted Allen is an out gay man, and he was part of that television show. Oh, I forget. It was a collection of like four or five gay men that would take on quote unquote clients and change to make them successful.
Are you talking about that show on Bravo?
Yes. Yeah. He is the host on Chopped now on the cooking channel. But that's where he first came into prominence, was one of that group of guys that would change people's, you know, they.
Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Yes. They redid their outfits, their wardrobe. They redid their living arrangement. They redid, Ted Allen.
I don't think this is the same guy. I don't think that's him. The reason I ask is because a little later in the story, so we're immediately after this, we're introduced to the main bad guy, as it were, Stuart Pemberton. He's the guy that gets up and he says a speech. There's somebody with Lois in the audience that tries to get Lois to stay where she's at. I'm assuming that's Ted Allen still, but they don't, he doesn't, I mean, I don't know. His hair is a little different, but he shows up again later. There's a moment, let's see, page five, page six, after Superman overhears the plot and he starts following these guys when they leave. A car races away. Superman chases after it, and he says, "There goes Allen." And then later, Allen's car halts near the Bell Bridge, and the guy gets out, and he's got a machine gun. But I don't know. It's like they introduce him as if we already know who he is. They don't really set him up so that we know until this moment that he's part of the whole. I don't know. It just felt really the inclusion of this guy felt really weird.
A quick Google says that issue 36 is the first time that we run into Ted Allen, but now he could be a minor enough character that Google doesn't really pick him up too readily. So, I mean, that is possible. But the DC Fandom Wiki, issue 36 is the first time that it has Ted Allen recorded. So
he's just one of those characters that they just didn't have enough room to fully introduce him in a realistic fashion, I guess.
Well, but then why even drop his name? I mean, it's his name. Yeah. No. I want to point out that three panels before that, is this the first time we have seen Lois actually driving?
I don't know.
So that was that struck me as something different, because usually we've seen a plane, we've seen a train, we've seen a bus, we've seen her being driven, chauffeured, as it were. Yeah. But I don't remember too many times that she has actually gotten in a car and driven somewhere.
I don't know. There's certain things like that that kind of pop out where we're like, I think it's in the next story, because I don't think we see the chief of the planet in this issue at all.
Mm-mm.
But there's a moment, I think, in the next story, and I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but we see the chief, and I realize that we're seeing him from behind, that we don't see his face. And then I started to think, have we ever seen his face? At this point, is he one of those characters that, because I remember one of the stories we talked about previously Clark bursts into his office and says, hey, I got this idea for a story. And the chief's like, get on it. But the whole time, the chief's got a newspaper in front of him, so you can't see his face.
Well, I think we have seen partial sometimes, yeah. You know, a side view.
Hmm. I don't know. I just got to thinking about that. But okay. Yeah, I don't know about Lois driving. That's, you know, and neither of us want to go back and start combing through all these issues.
No, if it were that big an issue, I probably would remember. But it did kind of tickle the brain. It's like, at the very least, this is unusual because we haven't seen it very many times. Unlike, let's say, Superman jumping. Ha, ha, ha. So.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second because okay. I think we're going to talk a lot about him flying in this episode and especially in the next episode. We'll tease the next episode real quick because the next episode we're talking about the first story in Superman number 10. And that is the story that, according to the internet, in regard to the DC comics, that's the story that Superman first flies. And the bit, there's one panel in the next story that shows Superman in the air. The people say it looks like he's hovering because his cape is not moving. There's no motion lines. So obviously, if he's hovering in midair, that means he can fly. And so that's why they point to that issue. However, all of the cases that we have talked about up to this point where it is super obvious he's flying, I don't understand why it takes one solitary panel for the whole world to go, oh, there it is. He's flying. Because something we'll also talk about in more detail in the next episode is that they don't actually mention that Superman can fly, even though from Superman 10 onward, when we see him in the air, he is flying. They don't actually mention it until, let's see, I wrote this down, Superman number 30.
Oh, wow.
The story entitled The Mysterious Mr. Mixie's Pitlick. It's the first appearance of Mixie's Pitlick.
Hey.
And there's a moment in there where Superman says, I thought I was the only one who could fly.
That's the first time he mentions. Now, man.
Yeah.
Goodness.
But to look at this issue, let's look at the scene where the bombs are being dropped on Metropolis.
Okay. Yes.
So not only, actually, we'll look at page 11, the page after the bombs start dropping. Superman's up in the sky. He's taking airplanes down. And not only is it fairly obvious just by looking at the panels that he's up there flying, there's a bit of narration that states,
but as he expertly dodges in and out among their raining bullets, they succeed only in sending their comrades down in flames.
So not only is he up there punching planes, he is able in midair to dodge bullets enough
back and forth, up and down,
that
yeah.
the planes are shooting each other down.
Right. Leaping up and falling is not enough to be able to do that. You can suspend physics in comic books only so much. And then it's like, but even the comic books have to have their own physics. And those physics don't make sense in the comic book. So,
right. Yeah. And so I wanted to point that out because I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about what's going to happen in issue 10 of Superman, because we're going to talk all about that in the next episode. But I wanted to point this out mainly as an example of something to think about when we're in the next episode and we're talking about Superman number 10 and we start talking about that one panel that made everybody go, okay, now it's super obvious that he's flying, because there is more in that issue that is way more obvious that he's flying than that one single solitary panel. And I can only assume that I guess everything else up to that point, when we're looking at it and we're going, oh, come on, he's flying here. I guess I can only assume that there's maybe they're like, well, yeah, but with these panels, you could almost come up with why he's not flying. But that one panel, his cape's not moving. There are no motion lines, which means he's just floating in midair. And I'm like, if he's up in the sky, whether he's floating or not, his cape's going to move, because the higher up you get, the windier it gets. I don't know.
But yeah, so this is something to keep in mind.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
And now back to the Superman Super Show.
It was kind of not cool that he took that locomotive engine and turned it 90 degrees and put it back down on that track on the bridge. Because yeah. Those men, when they got out of the locomotive, how in the hell are they going to get to the track?
Right. And it's funny, too, because so let's try to. So just to kind of beef up what's happening in the story before we get to this point, we got these guys, Pemberton, at a peace rally, down with disarmament. They don't want, or down with rearmament. They don't want the country rearming because they want to come in as Nation X and take the country over. And if the country, if the military is not fully armed, then they have an easier chance of doing it. So Superman, of course, gets mixed up in it and he's trying to stop them. And this guy, Ted Allen, sets out with a bunch of other bad guys to go blow up a bridge. And while Superman doesn't manage to stop them, they are able to blow up the bomb. It doesn't destroy the bridge, but it does weaken the bridge's foundations. And so a train is coming across the bridge, and Superman realizes that if the train gets in the middle of that bridge, the foundations are weak enough that the bridge will collapse. Everybody on the train will die. So he does what we love seeing Superman do. He jumps down in front of the train, and he physically stops it from moving forward. I know that we've seen him deal with the train at least one other time, but did he stop the train like this the last time?
I think he stood in front of it and made the train stop. Okay. I don't think he physically did.
Okay. So this is a first, I guess.
I think
but
so, yeah.
Stopping the train isn't enough. He knows that once he leaves, the train's going to go, all right, well, I guess let's keep going. So he literally picks the engine up and, yeah, sets it across the tracks. That's not perpendicular. What do you call that? That's
No, that is perpendicular. Is parallel perpendicular? Would be the same way.
Okay, yeah. That's right. Parallels is okay. So perpendicular across the tracks and then jumps away. But the funny thing about that, I love that they included this, the last panel on this page, to make us as readers feel better about what happened. Because the engineer and the other train guy is like, oh, did you see that? And the other guy says, I did. And look at the bridge's foundations.
Right.
We owe our lives to him. So they're okay with the train. Just, I mean, I don't know what they're going to use to get that train back on the track.
In 1941, I have no idea how hopefully, you fix that.
Hopefully Superman will come back after the bridge is fixed and get the train back on the tracks.
Yeah.
That's what I
don't
that's
know,
what I
but
assume.
That's, yeah.
He's probably got a little book, a little notebook in his tights, and he writes down, okay, go back and fix the train.
Right train. You know, okay.
Once I save everybody from the Nation X, go back and write the train. But
that's what he does on his off days, as he goes around undoing all the stuff he did.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
Yeah, that's funny. I also enjoyed, okay, so after this, the blowing up of the bridge isn't their only plan. They're also going to drop these bottles of narcotics into the reservoir or the water supply.
Yeah, they're going to poison the water.
And Superman has to come up with a plan really fast to stop them from doing that. And so his plan is to tell them that they have been double-crossed, that the bottles that they have do not contain deadly narcotics. It's just harmless water. And he'll prove it to them by drinking one of the bottles.
Right.
And of course, Superman being Superman, it doesn't affect him. So these dumbasses are like, oh, well, I guess it is water. And one of them takes a big drink out of it. And of course, it says he topples into unconsciousness. But the dude's dead. Come on. If they have like three bottles of water of poison here that they were going to dump into the water supply, that's some highly concentrated shit in one bottle.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And so this guy's dead. He's not just slumped into unconsciousness. He's dead. And as he's dropping, he goes, we've been tricked.
He drops the water, the bottle, probably into the water supply.
Right?
The way, yeah. It's but Superman is leaping away, so it must be okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's like, all right, that's all right. That's when we get the planes. I mean, this is a coordinated attack that they got going on. Blow up the bridge, which I assume would stop the army from bringing in tanks and supplies and junks like that. Because this would have been before the interstate highway system. That's exactly why the interstate highway system was built, to get military vehicles and supplies like that from one side of the country to the other as quickly as possible.
It was not built for our travel. That was not the intent.
Yeah, exactly. So we have the blowing up of the bridge, the poisoning of the water supply, and then the bombing of Metropolis. And there's at least four or five planes in the air. They're dropping bombs. We have this radio announcer saying, "News flash, the city has been attacked by mysterious bombers. Destruction widespread." So, yeah, a lot of dead people, a lot of injured people. We just don't see any of it, which, again, they've only got 13 pages to tell this story, but would have liked to have just seen some of the destruction. But, yeah, that's when Superman leaps into the air and destroys the airplanes. He kills, well, he doesn't kill one of the pilots who takes a shot at Superman. The bullet bounces off of Superman and ricochets back and kills him.
Right.
Which is at least the second time we've seen that happen.
Right.
And then we get Pemberton. The next plan of their, the next phase of their attack is they break into the radio station, WMET. MET, I'm assuming, is short for Metropolis. And Pemberton gets on the radio to tell everybody that they need to surrender. And the thing that I find the funniest about this is he refers to their nation, their conquering nation, as the conquering nation. He doesn't give a name to whatever conquering nation this is. And I just, it's like, okay, DC, come on, just say it, even if you have to make up a name. But for him to say, even now, the planes of the conquering nation zoom overhead. Why can't you say blah 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 Stan or something? You know?
Right, right.
I found
and
that really weird.
And the way
really
he
weird.
Says it, it seems like he's not a part of it too.
Yeah, yeah.
Now the planes of the Congress, it's like, well, aren't those your planes? I mean, he doesn't take ownership of being part of the same group, it seems.
Right.
He's like a third party narrator or something like that. Yeah.
It's kind of his way to try to avoid any legal ramifications if it goes south.
I guess, yeah.
But he's also using the opportunity to say, look, he's basically like, look, this nation is bombing us. We should probably surrender before it gets any worse. I think as citizens of Metropolis, we need to surrender. That's when Lois tries to come into the radio station and she is snatched up by one of the thugs. Superman, who's still leaping in the air, can hear what's going on in the radio station, jumps down and rescues Lois. I was really confused at first here because the guy uses Lois as a human shield, puts the gun to her head, and he's backing into an elevator. And Superman says, sorry, I can't sacrifice your life, but then turns around and starts beating up a bunch of other guys. And that I found that really confusing at first until I realized, oh, they went, so they're in an elevator right now. They're going down.
Right.
That's,
yeah. So I
Superman
guess.
Decided to stay up there and mop up before he jumped
now,
down to the ground to save her.
On this page, this to me signifies that he's flying.
Yes. Yes. Right. Yes.
I mean, there is no way that you. First of all, let me just say it. The way that it's drawn, where he goes out the window, kind of made me laugh because it looks like he just jumped. It just, you know. I don't know how he's going to manage to land on his feet to jump again, jumping like this, you know. But like this, and then he zooms down and in a nice big arc goes back into the doors at the bottom of the building to wait for that elevator. So, I mean, he's flying. He's flying.
That's some freaking amazing falling right there. I often see people fall from tall and arc
every
and go
time
into a doorway when they get to the bottom. Yeah.
Yep.
That again, we'll really hit on it in the next episode, but I don't understand why the one panel in the next issue is the nail in the coffin when we've got stuff like this. But they wrap this story up super quick. Superman hangs out by the elevator. As soon as it opens up, he just pops the guy in the chin. And I guess that's Pemberton at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And with
Pemberton down, it's all done. It's all over.
Right.
Nothing bad's going to happen again. And so Superman leaps away. Lois tells him, wait. And he says, why? I'm needed no longer. And then we get our final panel, which has become a staple now of these issues or of these stories. Mm-hmm. And it's one of my favorites because we've had those final panels. I know we had one just within the last couple of episodes where Lois is like, hey, I didn't even see you around. How did you get that story? And Clark's like, I got it from Superman. But this one is literally, he lets her type up her own version of the story and gets ready to submit it. And then tells her, the way he says it, I want to slap him. Because she says, like the article I've dashed off, you should turn green with envy. And his response is, strangely enough, at this moment, the presses are running off an article of mine, and it covers the same yarn. He might as well have just been flipping her the bird. You know?
He's like, there it is. I'll let you go to all that work. And then, by the way, mine is being printed. Yeah. Just so you know.
Not only did I also write the story, I got it in before you, and they're already printing it up. So even if they went with your story, it's too late to get on the presses anyway. Yeah. But thankfully, mine's being printed. Yep, it's like, what an asshole.
Seems to be the thing now is that Clark is never there, but yet his article always beats Lois's article, who typically is there
right
to print. So,
And yet he, every once in a while, likes to bring up the fact that he's got to act a certain way so she doesn't realize that he's Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that he acts like a coward. He does that on purpose. But also, based on this last panel, he's also a real asshole to her sometimes, too.
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah.
And he's even kind of waving at her. It's like he's walking away. He's being super dismissive of what, you know, hey, look, check out the article I wrote. It's great. Yeah, mine's already been printed. See ya.
Yeah.
So, it was, like you said, it felt different in tone, but good Lord, it's like the second conquering nation type of story, because we had one of those just a couple episodes back with the the ship and the submarine and the
the signaling from the ship and the
because that guy was also pretending to be, you know, calling for peace and all this and rearmament's a bad thing and using it to try to take over the country. So it's weird that we have two of them, the same basic, it's not the same story. A lot of different stuff happens, but the same theme, very similar themes like that. And
I guess it's because it's what's in the zeitgeist at the moment.
Yeah. So it's what's on people's minds.
Yeah.
And there were, you hear the term homegrown Nazis all the time. There were these groups in America at the time. I mean, hell, they had the Nazi party were marching the streets of New York and junk. And so
Nazis, socialists, fascists, they're all types of thought that people had even at that point. So, I mean, any one of those could have wound up just like Nazis, socialists, fascists. So, I mean, it's like all of them were pretty much anti what we had, democracy or a republic or, you know, however, bureaucracy, however you want to describe it. It was not fascist or socialist. So they wanted their point of view. Then, of course, the extreme end of that is Nazism. So, it was here at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I want to, I think I say this almost every time. I want to get more versed in what was going on at the time than I, you know, maybe be able to speak on it during these episodes. And yet I've done nothing more than just talk about that. That's what I wanted to.
Your dance card is pretty full.
It is. And even with stuff I listen to, I mean, you should see my freaking podcast queue. It's full.
Yep.
And there's new shit being added every week. And there's like, what, a million new podcasts that start up every single day?
Seems like it, yeah. Everybody is getting involved.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about this issue?
No, sir.
Do you have any, are there any moments that stand out to you as the funniest moment? Your favorite moment?
Probably my favorite moment is that one that I pointed out about the train engine being late on the track 90 degree. Because, you know, I mean, and he just left it. And it's like, well, yes, okay, it does do what you said it would do. nobody is getting through either way now. That's absolutely right. My first thought was, well, what about the dudes in the engine? How do they leave? But then after that, my thought was, how in the world, as a regular person, do you fix that? Here is the sign that Superman was here. This, you know, like we have etchings of ancient aliens and all this stuff on the rocks and whatever. Here's the proof that the, and it's like, no. This is proof Superman was here because this cannot be done. So
see, I'm gonna pitch this to DC Comics right now, and I'm gonna offer Chris Somney. I think he should draw it because I think he would be a perfect Superman artist. But they should do a series set in the Golden Age that is a lot of him coming back to fix these issues after the fact. You know, something that's not action packed. It's more of personal stories about Superman, but also within that are him, you know, the shit that we don't see, like him coming back to fix the train, you know.
But well, just kind of like that funny book that Marvel has put out about that group that goes around cleaning up after superhero battles.
Yeah.
You could have some group of normal people that go and it's their job to undo the stuff that Superman has done. Yep. The cave-ins of the valley and the moving of buildings and all that. It's like, yeah, let's see what regular everyday people would do to fix this stuff that Superman has helped us with. Yeah.
But look at that panel, though, of the train crosswise on the tracks. Look at the length of the engine compared to the width of the tracks. To me, it looks like it's balanced very precariously.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for those guys in the pilot room or whatever you want to call that part of the engine where they drive the train, you know, there are walkways that go all the way around that engine and railings that they can get out on and walk around the train from the outside. And so they can do that. But once they leave the back of that train and start moving to the middle, does that throw off the balance? Yeah. Is the train going to pitch into the freaking river? But obviously not, unless those guys are just talking from within the train. But
maybe they had already gotten out. Maybe he gave them a chance to get out and then set the train like that.
Well, the panel where he's lifting up the train, which apparently has no wheels.
He picked it right off the wheels. Yeah.
There's a guy in the cabin. Mm-hmm. Going, hey, what the hell are you doing?
Yep.
Yeah. Fun issue. Probably was a very deeply political, serious issue at the time.
I would
say had a lot of people talking, but I enjoyed it.
Yep, me too.
Cool. Want to wrap her all up then?
Yes, sir.
All right, folks. That was Action Comics number 36. Did you guys read it? Let us know. What is the email address? TheSupermanSupershow@gmail.com. It's in the show notes. Don't worry about writing that down. It's in the show notes. But let us know. We haven't gotten any feedback since we've come back. And, you know, we used to do these feedback episodes every now and again and would like to do another one at some point. So send us some feedback. I promise I won't lose it like I did on Hither Came Conan. Well, I can't promise that, but I'll do my best. But yeah, until next week, folks, I'm Steven and that's Ed. And this was the Superman Super Show. Bye.
Ciao.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to thesupermansupershow@gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Steven or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out somanypodcasts.com or use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Oh, but wait, there's Superman. He'll save us. Superman! Superman! Wait, where are you going? Well, to hell with him. We'll have to deal with these marauders ourselves.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.